It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany. This is my show, and a happy new year to all of our listeners. Thank you for listening to the Trupany Show. And today I have a guest with me, as per usual, and that's Chelsea Spollen of ShouldersUp.net. How are you, ma'am?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you very much. Now, we are going to talk today about one of your favourite subjects, which is women's professional wrestling, and more specifically, Pro Wrestling Eve. Now, back at the beginning of the year, I was part of the editorial team at Total Wrestling Magazine that made Pro Wrestling Eve our ones to watch in 2017, and by God, did they not disappoint us. They lived up to our hype, and they've had an incredible 2017, and they gave us all a Christmas present via their YouTube channel, which was an entire show to watch. So we thought we'd review the show and talk about Pro Wrestling Eve in 2017 and the things they've done. Firstly, Chelsea, now, as you know, giving us ourselves proper due diligence here, we are friends with Dan and Emily Reed, who have been on the show before, who are very, very cool people, and who keep giving me work by being really interesting and letting me write about them for various magazines, including FSM. So what we can say about them is obviously going to be fairly glowing, but they are really, really good at what they do. So Chelsea, what was your impressions of Eve? Because I don't think you'd seen any Eve itself before you watched this card, had you?
Well, I'd watched individual matches from pro wrestling Eve shows, but I'd never watched an entire Eve show from start to finish before. So that was a treat. This is really, really cool. Like, I did not just tweet it to tell people to watch it before they take it down, because they said it's only going to be up for like a limited time only. I did not just tweet it to tell people to watch it because they're your friends and they were really nice to me that one time we were all on the podcast together. I tweeted it because I was like, man, this is really cool and people should watch it. Like, it's not really like any other wrestling product I've ever seen before. It's a very cool, edgy, like punk rock vibe, but it also presents women's wrestling in a very prestigious way, which is awesome. Like, I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing for me about the company, is there's such a mix of things going on. You know, they, if you talk to Dan and Emily, they are very big on Japanese wrestling. Pro Wrestling Eve comes from the name Pro Wrestling Noah. They it's a tribute to the great company from Japan, and they're trying to apply some of that prestige, global honored prestige, if you will, to women's wrestling, and I think that's really important. But also, their attitude to wrestling is mixed in with music, and it's mixed in with a bunch of stuff that is very politically minded, that is very up to date with feminism, with sexuality. Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff going on this show that's undercurrent, but over the top of it is, you're right, this prestigious outlook. They're trying to make the She-One, which is what this show's about, is She-One Night 2. They're trying to make the whole thing seem like a really important tournament. And they've managed that because they got some of the best talent in Europe, some of the best talent in North America that was available to them, and some of the best talent in Japan that was available to them, to make this show something really special. Now, I wasn't there, unfortunately, for this, because I couldn't make it. But it, the way the film is, the way the show is shot as well, gives you a real close vibe as to what it's like to be in the Rose Gallery.
I watched it and I was like, man, I've been saying this before, because everything I hear about Pro Wrestling Eve is so awesome. I was like, I desperately need to go to one of those shows in person sometime. It's worth the trip to the UK.
Well, we've got the York Hall, and if anyone wants to buy Chelsea a lottery ticket, no, I was going to say a plane ticket to get her here, you should get to see some awesome, awesome stuff, because, you know, that show at the York Hall on the 5th of May is going to be feature a couple of matches, including Aja Kong versus Viper, which should be something very special indeed, and Mako Satomura versus Kaylee Ray, which I am personally really looking forward to, because that's my favorite British female wrestler versus my favorite wrestler in the world. So this should be something really, really cool. Now, it was a tournament show, so it's what we're reviewing today is kind of a little bit out of sequence, but it's such a good snapshot of what the company can do, and it's really there to encourage you to subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Eve streaming service, which you can find via the Pro Wrestling Eve social medias and website. So let's start with the first match, which is an interesting opener. Session Moth Martina takes on Sami Zayn, the Pro Wrestling Eve champion, What are your impressions of Martina, first of all? Because she is something a bit special and a bit different.
So, I have to say I'm not thrilled about her association with Bram. That's something that I know about her. But other than that, as a wrestler, I think she's really, really good. And it's amazing to me that she's been able to, it seems like, mostly make a career for herself out of being a really good comedy wrestler. Because that's not really something that very many women here in North America get to do. I'm impressed that the British scene is, like, deep enough and also, you know, I guess that there's enough opportunities there that she's been able to do that. Because this is the probably fifth or sixth time I've watched her have a really silly comedy match. And I was able to just, like, you know, laugh and enjoy it and get into it. And you don't get to see women have comedy matches very often.
No, she's something very different and very special, I think. I like her a lot just because the first time I see her, she's just one of those people who just seems to be really enjoying herself in the ring. And that's something you don't necessarily see. Yeah. You know, she's having a lot of fun with what she's doing, but she's clearly very driven. She knows how to put a match together. You know, she's everything she does is entertaining, and it's still within the idiom of being a great pro wrestler, you know, and the match she has here with Sami Zayn is really, really cool just because it's doing very, very different stuff, and it's a great way to open a show, I think.
Yeah, and you know, it's cool because if you didn't know that much about Martina, which I'm sure the people in the audience, like, they seem like they're experienced pro wrestling fans based on how they react to things, but if you didn't know anything about either of these wrestlers, Sami Zayn comes out and she looks very intimidating, right? Like, you look at her and you know she means business. And when Martina comes out, it's not necessarily clear. I mean, like, you can tell right away that she can wrestle enough to kind of, you know, keep up with, like, basic stuff, but it's not necessarily clear how much she really has in the tank. And then when they actually get going, they have, like, an actual cool little wrestling match in the middle of all this stuff that's really funny. So it's enjoyable.
What do you think of Sami Zayn as champion? Here she's kind of playing a role. She's got the classic role of the heel champion that can't win. You know, she's defending her title and she's got beat by Laura DiMatteo with the night before, and it's like, this is really interesting. This is something really cool. It's old school booking and it's an old school storyline, but it works so well in this context.
I mean, this is the second time I've watched a Sami Zayn match, and I really enjoy it. She's very scary and intimidating, even though she doesn't win. I guess that's not easy to do. You know, now that you've said that, I'm thinking about it, and, like, that's not an archetype that a lot of wrestling companies do very well nowadays, is it?
No, but it is the classic Jerry Lawler when he's a heel in Memphis, Ric Flair in Texas, Ric Flair in North Carolina when he's a heel, you know, Nick Bockwinkel in Minnesota. It's the, we know you're really good, but you are wasting your talent because you're just trying to skimp past it to keep the belt for yourself. You know, there is just like that. It's such a classic storyline to tell, and Sami Zayn is playing it so really, really well. And it's not like she's a bad wrestler either. You get some cool spots.
Oh my god, no, she's really good.
She's fantastic. You know, that sliding German suplex off the ropes is just phenomenal, and she is really, really cool to watch as a wrestler, as a spectacle in herself, which is what you need in your ace of the company, of your champion of the company, even when they're kind of losing a lot. More so, because you have to kind of, like, say, well, they're still worthy of being champion of the company, and it just clicks so well.
Right, and whoever ends up being, I'm assuming, I guess, that a babyface is going to take that title off her at some point, and whoever ends up doing it is going to look so fantastic when they do, because she'll be able to give them an absolutely amazing match, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and I'm really looking forward to that main event at York Hall, which should be the winner of this tournament. Are we going to spoil this, or should we leave it unspoiled?
Ooh, that's a good question. Maybe leave it unspoiled?
Leave it unspoiled. We'll leave it unspoiled, and we can tell you at the end who won the tournament and what's going to happen next, and you can then stop listening if you want to.
That's a good idea.
Okay, then. The next match was Living Legend, FMW-trained Emi Sakura, the former Ace of Ice Ribbon, and she takes on the British wrestling legend, the Shit Talk Queen, Jetta, in a match that didn't last very long, which is telling another story. But Jetta is phenomenal. I love her to bits. I interviewed her earlier this year for Total Wrestling, and she's such a cool person to talk to and has such a cool understanding of the wrestling business. And you didn't really obviously get to see an awful lot what she was about here, but you certainly got to see her presence. And Emi Sakura has been one of the mainstays of Pro Wrestling Eve back to their previous run a few years ago, where she came over and really gave Eve a lot of presence in the wrestling business and a lot of respect. Emi Sakura is evangelical about Joshi. She is a person that goes out into different places to try and build new markets. She's one of those, how can I put this? She's one of the big pieces of the jigsaw that makes wrestling tick. There are a few people like that. I'd say Sanjay Dutt is another one who just goes off and tries to put shows on in India. You know, he tries to do things differently. He doesn't want to do things the same way as everybody else does. If there's no opportunity, he'll make his own opportunities. And Emi Sakura is much the same as that. So I really enjoyed this match, even though it was only 31 seconds long, because it's part of the pomp and pageantry of what Eve is about, and certainly shows off Jetta in a different light to what I've seen her before. But this was really, really cool. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
There is no shame in getting beat by Emi Sakura. Like, she's 41, and she does not look or move like she's 41. Like, she just looks incredible. Like, the only thing that I'm disappointed by, I guess, because it was so short, even though, like, as a story, it makes sense. I totally get it. Jetta lost first to Mako, right?
Really quickly.
And then she lost to Emi. It makes sense to me, but I was just disappointed because I could watch Emi Sakura wrestle all day. Like, she's awesome. She radiates such joy. Like, you know, she's so happy to be doing what she's doing. And even when she's being, like, kind of scary and intimidating to her opponent, it's just like, it's so cool to watch. Like, how can you watch her and not feel happy and good? You know, it's really neat because she still, like, she does everything perfectly. It's just really, really cool.
Jet is much the same kind of role. She's wrestled everyone who's a big name in wrestling in the UK. Like, people like Paige and Nikki Cross had big money feuds with her on the indies 5 or 6 years ago. She took a break from pro wrestling up until this year. Then she came back. And she's done so well in the last 12 months because it's not her day job. It's something she does for fun, literally for fun. And she's picking her spots really, really well. And she is a person who is really important. Again, it's like you were saying about Martina being a comedy wrestler. Well, Jetta was probably the first one to really do that. She was looking at trying to do things differently in the UK wrestling scene. When I talked to her for Total Wrestling earlier in the year, she was saying, like, when she was first starting and starting to make an impact on the UK scene, there was kind of like two types of wrestling. There was the holiday camps and the town halls, which is the bread and butter of the British wrestling industry, and there was the specialist wrestling shows. And those specialist wrestling shows all essentially looked like Ring of Honor shows. You know, it was all very strong style. It was all very not much character, straight up wrestling kind of stuff. And Jetta was working for Brian Dixon, and she was doing like all the crowd participation stuff, the shall I stuff, all that things for him. And he was stressing on her that you've got to get the crowd involved all the time. You need to pander to them. You've got to get them on your side or get them away from you. And she kind of figured out, well, if I take that and apply it to the specialist wrestling shows, they'll hate me because they don't like the town hall and the holiday camp shows. They don't like that style of wrestling. So if I bring that style of wrestling to the specialist shows, they won't like me, and they'll like me even less. And that's really where she found a niche. That's where she became the shit talk queen. And
that's so smart.
Yeah, and she's got such a brain for it. And she managed to carve out a niche for herself in pro wrestling in the UK. She got taken over to America. She was part of the homebreaking crew in WSU. So she's had a lot of international experience. She's done things differently her way, and doesn't really show off exactly what she can do in this match because it's part of a story, but I'm sure there's going to be something bigger for her from this particular tournament.
I would hope so. I hope at some point she gets to have a real match with Emi Sakura, because, like, just watching her sell getting beat up, I was like, I want to see a real fight between those two. That would be fun.
Okay, then. Next, we move on to two of the young charges of the British women's wrestling scene. Laura Di Matteo, as she wrestled Jamie Hayter. And this is the first time I'd seen Jamie Hayter, but I was massively impressed with her. She is absolutely fantastic. She's got a talent on the rise. And Laura DiMatteo, who I've been impressed with since I first saw her, Abs for Days.
Yeah.
It's just like, she looks so impressive as a wrestler. When I first saw her, maybe 2 years ago, I saw her in person at the BW Stardom show in London. And I was like, yeah, she looks pretty cool, but she looks awfully slight for this particular line of work. And then she had this really, really good match. And I was like, she's going to be good. And now she's got to the point where she is really, really good. And I've seen her in Progress this year. I've seen her in Eve this year. She is absolutely a fantastic ring general. And something seems to have clicked for her that wasn't there before, certainly in the last 12 months. She's got to be really, really good. Jamie Hayter, such a classic heel kind of character, very in your face, very aggressive. Love her to death as well. What did you think of these two?
Oh my god, this match is so good. Like, I was really, really into this. And there were people who were tweeting me when I was tweeting about it, saying that, you know, people who had gone to the tournament and watched, like, the whole thing, saying it was one of the best matches of the tournament. This is really fun. I instantly liked Laura DiMatteo. I saw her and was like, wow, she seems like a really cool baby face. Like, she seems very sure of herself, but not in a cocky, arrogant kind of way. You know, just like she knows what she's doing. And Jamie Hayter was really cool right away. Like, she's got this very impressive presence. Watching the two of them lock up was really, really interesting. They have, I think, very compatible wrestling styles. They're both pretty athletic. Like, I was surprised by some of the stuff they could do in this match. There's good mat wrestling. There's really, really intelligent pacing. Like, there's a lot of fast bits, right, where they're just like going at each other, but they don't wear you out. You don't get exhausted by any of it. Like, they figured out how to space everything out really well, which was really impressive to me because these are two women that I know very, very little about. I had only really heard of either of them in the context of people talking about Pro Wrestling Eve. So the fact that, I mean, like, I'm just continually impressed by how deep the UK scene is, but the fact that they're both, you know, people who were relatively unknown to me, and then they had this really impressive match was so cool. Like, it's awesome that there are people that talented out there who are making a name for themselves, who are just, like, you know, ready to break through.
Yeah, this is the thing. And I think Laura DiMatteo is going to have a fantastic year. You know, the Progress are starting to put more pressure onto their women's champion, Toni Storm, and it's starting to really look like they're trying to put some serious heat behind the women's division. That was kind of one of the things that was a knock on Progress this year. They had the championship tournament towards the end of last year going into this year, and everyone was like, well, yeah, but know what you're going to do now. And, you know, Toni Storm is a fantastic and incredibly viable champion,
right?
But it's like, they've got all this women's talent, they need to do more with it rather than just having the one match on the show, which is Tony defending against Challenger of the Week. And
it's how men's wrestling promotions who have a women's division so often struggle with that exact thing.
Yeah, I think that's something they really, really need to look at and try and build upon, because it's not like they haven't got the talent, because they've got a similar talent pool as Pro Wrestling Eve have. That's the people that work for them. It's difficult. It gets more difficult now for Progress, who are kind of like the top tier, so there's an expectation of the talent they will get. But they're doing such a good job with their training school. Like, Laura DiMatteo is a Jimmy Havoc student. She learned at the Progress dojo. So, you know, it's trying to, I guess, trying to fill that gap and trying to get the women's division up to the same standard of the men's division. But it's like, it's possible and it's doable, and there's such a deep talent pool at the minute in British wrestling, and I'm sure Progress can fix that, and I'm sure it's one of the things they're looking at fixing.
And, you know, I mean, I'm not surprised Eve is ahead of the curve in terms of the stuff that they're offering. Like, it just feels like such a cool product that's, like, ahead of its time, is kind of how I felt watching this. So if there's something that Progress, who's, like, top dog in the UK scene, needs to do to catch up, that's not surprising to me.
We're halfway through the card, so let's have a quick chat about the crowd itself and what you thought of the building, because it's a compact and bijou building, as I've been there myself. You literally are two arm spans away from between the bar and the ring. It fits a couple of hundred people uncomfortably, but we're all very happy when we're in there. what did you think of that atmosphere that you saw? Because to me, it sounds very different to a lot of the other wrestling shows I see in the UK.
Oh, man. I wanted to be a part of this crowd when I was watching this show. And I could tell that it was a small venue. And I just... the fans are very passionate. They are very excited. They are treating this wrestling like with the prestige that it deserves, you know? Like they're cheering for all the baby faces and booing all the heels. And like I watched this and thought, man, I wish more of the shows that I go to around here in New York were like this, because New York has a good wrestling scene here, but a lot of the shows that are kind of like this, where it's like a small bar, you know, it's a very small venue and lots of people crammed in together, you would think that people who are willing to do that would be really enthusiastic about what they're watching, right? But
yeah.
So many people are either just like in it to kind of get themselves over by chanting dumb things, or just like they're just bored. And nobody was bored at the show. And it's not just that the wrestling was really good. I've been to shows with like amazing quality wrestling where the audience just didn't care.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the magic is that Eve's tapped into here. Maybe it's just that like there's a uniquely passionate group of fans. You know, it can't just be that though. Also, I feel like the progressive politics that Dan and Emily project out into the world with all of their social media and everything that they do to promote the product and everything that the product visibly stands for attracts an audience that is really special.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a lot of audiences in the UK, as I've been going to shows in the last 12 months, seem to have grown up a bit in the last 12 months. Does that make sense?
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot less, there's still a lot of petty cliqueiness about some wrestling fans, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I was at the Progress show in Sheffield the other month, and someone started chanting both these guys, and then someone chanted back, pick a side. So there's like, I think there's been a very kind of shift towards, we're going to do, I don't think it's like this, we've all had a meeting and we decide we're going to behave properly. I think there's just been a maturity of, these guys are trying really, really hard for us, or these girls are trying really, really hard for us, we should show them the respect they deserve. And that's not the same for all wrestling companies. It's not a generic kind of generalization, but I think it is true specifically for companies like Progress and for companies like Pro Wrestling Eve that attract a similar crowd no matter where they go. If you look at the Manchester crowd and the Sheffield crowd for Progress, there's a lot of the same people, and and there's a lot of the same type of people, and I think that's really where they score over other companies, and certainly, but I think it's filtering into all companies, if you see what I mean.
That's good to hear. I have to wonder to what extent a lot of the conversations about social justice that have happened in wrestling fandom over the last year or so have influenced the way that crowds behave at shows. I hope that some of that stuff has had a positive impact, because I feel like wrestling fans have had to have some really hard conversations about how do we behave at shows? What kind of behavior from other fans do we tolerate? What kind of behavior do we tolerate from wrestlers that we like? You know, I don't know. I don't want to turn the whole show into a discussion about just that, because that's like its own separate thing. But I hope that some of that stuff is part of things changing for the better.
Certainly. And I think also this show, there is a lot more female voices. The actual like chanting is a lot softer in tonal quality. You can hear it. It's not the same. If you A-B this against a Rev Pro show, which tends to be a more male-orientated audience, then you can hear the difference, and there's like a softer quality to the sound. There is lots of women in this audience who are really enjoying the wrestling, and I think that's really important, as you would kind of expect, because it's a female-friendly product with females in charge of the company. Dan, you are clearly a male, don't worry. And, you know, with female wrestlers, female referees, and it's becoming much more of a female audience as well, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's really great. I have to say, though, also, like, I'm flipping through stuff in the YouTube clip in the background while we're talking about this, just like kind of rewatching stuff. And there are also a lot of dudes who are right there ringside, so it clearly appeals to a lot of the male fans as well. It's not gender segregated. It's welcoming everybody.
Yes, which is really what all wrestling should do. All right, then, we'll move on to the next match, which was Nicole Matthews versus Nina Samuels in a heel versus heel match, which was really, really cool. Laid out with the promos to start with, then they laid into each other, and I really enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun to watch. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
This is really interesting. Heel versus heel is a dynamic that I feel like I see a lot of people do on the North American wrestling scene, and they usually don't do it this well. I really liked the promos that we got to establish both of the characters. I had seen a fair amount of Nicole Matthews. I'm less familiar with Nina Samuels, but I feel like I got a really good sense of who she is. It's interesting. Like, she comes across as conniving and smart and also kind of like very into the pageantry of wrestling, you know? And then Nicole Matthews comes across as like, you know, more like, hey, I'm better than you. I have a more interesting career. I know what I'm doing. I'm not going to take any of your crap. And then when the two of them, you know, get to the wrestling part, it's really, really neat to see that dynamic that they established in the promo, like, actually translate to the physical stuff they do in the ring. Nicole Matthews is so good. Like, I always love watching her wrestle because she does a really great job of communicating little things about what her character is meant to be feeling to you when she does, like, individual small things like a soccer kick or throwing a punch. You know, she does that stuff really well, but she also does, you know, a beautiful fisherman suplex with a really nice toe point bridge. Like, she's so on her game, and Nina Samuels keeps up with her, which is no small feat. You know, it's cool seeing the two of them go at it, because it actually, when I was watching it, really did feel like a legitimate competition. I was like, I don't know who's better. They're both so good. I enjoyed this. I could watch another match between the two of them and be very happy about it.
Yeah, I think this. What was amazing to me was clearly the crowd kind of got behind Nicole Matthews to start with, and then they turned toward Nina Samuels towards the end of the match as she was putting so much effort in to try and win the match.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
like, she worked her ass off in this match, and then when she teases, like, trying to go to get Nicole up over her shoulders a few times, right?
Yeah.
Like, she tries and Nicole gets down, and then she tries again and Nicole gets down, and when she finally gets it's a GTS, right? When she finally gets it on her, it's such a relief, and you're like happy for her, even though that's such a, like, I feel like anybody other than Hideo at this point doing a GTS is such a dick move, right?
yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, it's a heel move just because of it's got all this baggage associated with it. And I don't know, it felt like the perfect choice. It was really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's such a cool match. It's such a little gem in this card with, like, great matches, but it's such a different set of psychology as well to everything you've seen before on the card, which is what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it stands out. Like, this is one of the best paced, best book wrestling shows I've watched this year, for sure. Like, everything is done with intent, and the intention is really, really smart and really, really well thought out, and this match is no exception.
Okay, then, we move on then next to Charlie Morgan versus Kaylee Ray, or as the fans will say, Charlie f***ing Morgan, Kaylee f***ing Ray. by far the two most popular wrestlers on this card. Now, Charlie Morgan, I interviewed for Total Wrestling Magazine this month, which you can find at their website. If you want to go interview, it's the one coming up, so if you want to pre-order it, you can get to that now. And I have interviewed a lot of wrestlers this year, but one of the most nicest, level-headed, clearly understands what she wants to get out of the business and understands how she's going to get it out of the business, people I've talked to, is Charlie Morgan. She is absolutely fantastic. She is a gem of a human being, and she is clearly having a turnaround in her career. She's a little bit older than Kaylee Ray, believe it or not, even though Kaylee Ray seems to have been around forever. But Charlie Morgan's career has taken a different path. She's been one of those people that came out of the Bellatrix school of pro wrestling, and she worked a different set of not so mainstream companies to get to where she is. And now she's kind of switched promotions and she's doing things very, very differently. And she broke away from her whole character of Penelope into something that was a lot different to what she's doing in the, has been a lot different to what she's been doing in the past. She's getting to do a lot more stuff because she's working with people who are just as good as she is. In that interview, we talked a little bit of a spoiler for the interview, but she said that she spent a lot of her career going to different places and being the person that got other people over, whereas now she's being used as a star, and it really, really shows. She has a ton of confidence in what she's trying to do. She's very, very confident in her character and what she's trying to achieve. And then you've got Kaylee Ray, the daredevil of British women's wrestling. A woman I have seen have go toe to toe with Io Shirai in a bar.
I'm so jealous.
In a bar in South London. I have seen her do incredible things with Alpha Female, with Yenny Shodin, with all these great talent. She's been in Impact Wrestling, she's been in WWE, she was in the Mae Young Classic. She's been everywhere, she's done everything. She is arguably the best British wrestler, women's wrestler we've seen in a long, long time, and these two are the perfect opponents. And she's 24, and Charlie Morgan, I think, is 26, 27. You know, this is just like a classic example of how the British wrestling, women's wrestling scene has grown in the last few years, and these two are leading it, and they're doing a fantastic job. What do you think of these two, Chelsea?
This is so good. This is so much fun. I knew very little about Charlie Morgan, but I watched a promo that my friend Kyle linked me to on Twitter that I think was right before this particular Eve show. And then I watched this, and the second she came out, I just instantly liked her. I was like, I don't know what's going on there, but whatever it is, there's a reason the crowd is really excited about her. And then, you know, I mean, for her to be booked against Kaylee Ray, I was assuming there was going to be something special there. Because Kaylee is just, she's just incredible. Like, she's so charismatic. She's so sure of herself. She wrestles with so much joy and so much enthusiasm. She's so much fun to watch. And these two have a cool chemistry between them, even just like standing in the ring, like smiling at each other, you know, kind of like, hey, we're going to do this before the match starts. And there's a competitiveness there that is really, really cool and seems a little genuine, because I think Charlie Morgan really wants to prove herself, you know?
Definitely. Yeah.
Seeing the two of them rest, you know, like, I mean, the match starts outside the ring before there's a bell. And they're just wrestling on the floor of a bar. And then they're wrestling on the bar, you know? And, I mean, that kind of thing is really difficult to pull off well. Either it works or it doesn't work. I feel like that worked in this case really well in their favor, because the crowd really, really enjoyed it. I don't necessarily know that all of it works as well on film as the stuff that happens in the ring, because it's harder to see some of the details. But I can tell that the crowd was still really excited about it and reacting to it. So it didn't rob them of any energy, you know, that they needed for the match. If anything, I think it probably enhanced it. We were all waiting for the moment that Kaylee Ray was going to jump off something, right? And
yeah,
that,
yeah.
And that paid off. That was cool. I was really annoyed when they got interrupted. I'm sorry to spoil the finish, but like, I did not want them to get interrupted. I wanted them to keep wrestling forever, because I don't know what that chemistry is there, but it's neat. Like, they have something. They you know, it's fun to watch them throw punches at each other, let alone any of the more complex stuff. And then, like, you know, I feel like if you can watch somebody throw a punch in wrestling and you're really excited about it, then they're a really good wrestler. When you have two wrestlers like that and they both look like they're really enjoying it, that's something special.
This match is just like, this is cracking. The only thing comparable to it I've seen, which is completely sublime, like, no, not sublime, but it's kind of like the opposite of what this is. If you go back to the world of sports matches, there was a match between Vic Faulkner and Johnny Saint. I think it was in like 79 or 80, maybe a little bit later than that, 81. And those are two guys who love wrestling, and they spend 20 minutes loving wrestling each other, because every time they get up, they've got a big grin on their face. And
yeah,
to me, this is the modern day version of that. You can do this, well, I can do it better, and here's how. You know, it's trying to top each other and try to do something different and trying to be better than the other person. And you've got two similar kind of characters, and they're both badasses who are popular with the crowd, and they go for it. And this was just that kind of style of wrestling, and it's the kind of wrestling I really, really, truly love. And you're right, it was annoying to have Nina Samuels come in and spoil the ending, but it was part of the bigger story of the tournament, so it worked out really well for everybody.
And also, like, Nina Samuels having a match with either of those women to settle a score because she interrupted them, I would not be sad about that. I would be really excited to watch it. So I think it was worth it. But I wanted to see who was going to win because it was very tense, very competitive.
Which is the point of pro wrestling, which some people forget.
It's true. But it's not everything feels that way, you know?
No, you're right. Sometimes it is just there just because it's there and, you know... And it's harder to do that now because there's just so much wrestling in the world.
Yeah.
You know, eventually it just becomes, well, here's another match. You know? So,
yeah, it's really easy to get burnt out with the amount of wrestling there is to watch. And that's a credit to Eve also, you know, not just this match, but like to this show and Eve as a promotion, that everything feels so refreshing and it still feels new.
Yes, I agree with you there. Okay then, just before we get to the main event, quick word on production. On commentary was Ollie Hogben, who's been a noted British wrestling commentator for quite some time, and Leah Owens. What did you think of those two?
I really liked it. I watch a lot of WWE, which is like my own fault. Anytime I get actual really good wrestling commentary that doesn't detract from the matches and actually just kind of like lets the matches tell the story and, you know, provides a few details here and there and, you know, proper emotional reactions, like, that's just really refreshing. I liked that they made use of Leah Owens' experience but didn't overdo it. You know, there wasn't like the 5-minute conversation about, well, you've had this match with this wrestler and this match with this wrestler. It was like the perfect balance of talking about the match and then here are our credentials to be talking about the match. I like the fact that there was an emphasis on talking about the story of the match and not just the moves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes wrestling commentators are a little too obsessed with telling you, like, that was this type of suplex and that was this particular type of submission hold. And sometimes I just don't care. I just want to watch wrestling and enjoy it, you know?
It's kind of difficult because there's only one guy who's made that style work, which is Joey Styles. And I wanted everyone to sound like Joey Styles for so long, but I realized that not everyone can do that. There's only Joey Styles who can do that. And Jim Ross to an extent, but Jim Ross really found his groove as a storyteller, whereas Joey was about explaining the moves and getting everybody over that way. I think it's about how you do it. And I think Ollie and Leah in this particular case have that nice balance of, you know, understanding the importance of the people who are wrestling, because, you know, it's difficult to get someone who's not watched Eve before, getting the importance of Emi Sakura or Meiko Satomura over to somebody, or what Viper's done in Japan this year. Those are tricky things to get over without boring people to tears. You know?
They give you just enough, though. They give you enough that you could Google it if you want to. If you want to look up the Artist of Stardom Championship when they talk about it, you look that up and you look at the wrestlers on that Wikipedia page or cage match page and go, oh, I don't know what this is, but I know it's important. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the important thing. They've got enough information while still sounding like they're having fun doing the job as well.
Yeah. They were involved emotionally in this show and they enjoyed it. And that made it easier for someone watching it at home to enjoy it, which is great.
And most importantly, treated it like a sports event.
Yes. And that's... Why is that so rare?
I don't know. I just don't get it. It's like, you know, it's... We've bought into the deceit. We're here now. We paid the ticket. Treat us with some respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Leia and Ollie, they did a cracking job on this particular case. Right then.
They did.
We move on to the main event of that particular evening, which pitted the then Artist of Champion... Artist of Stardom Champion, part of their Trios Championships. The Vixen of Violence Viper, also known as Pippa Niven, to those of you who watch the Mae Young Classic and haven't seen her indie work, versus, as Emily Reed quite rightly said, widely regarded as the greatest professional wrestler in the world today, Meiko Satomura. And I love it when Emily announces the things I think. Because Emily announced... Emily, the one thing that will actually ring out for me in my head from 2016 and will never leave me was the music dying down and the crowd dying down in the Res Gallery. Minami Toyota climbs in the ring and she undoes a robe and Emily goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest professional wrestler who ever lived, Minami Toyota." And it's like, whoa. You can tell Emily loves being a ring announcer, and she clearly does a great job.
She does. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And probably sober this particular night. Anyway, she has a tendency to get shots between matches on other nights. Anyway. Meiko Satomura and Viper was absolutely phenomenal. And it's one of those matches that is the advantage of being a British wrestling company, because Sendai Girls and Stardom are not working together at the moment. They had a feud in 2015 into 16, which was a big money feud for both companies, so they're kind of staying away from each other. So the odds of you seeing Meiko Satomura versus Viper in a Japanese ring are slim. However, in Pro Wrestling Eve, they don't have those affiliations, and they can put people together who wouldn't normally wrestle each other. The only other kind of like example I thought of this was back in WCW in around about 1990, when they had Big Van Vader, who was New Japan's the IWGP heavyweight champion, and Stan Hansen, who was the Triple Crown heavyweight champion for All Japan, and Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki were not that happy about them being working for a different company, and they couldn't control what they did. So in the end, when they did have a big feud, it ended up being a double count out to keep Antonio Inoki and Giant Baba happy.
Oh.
But that didn't
sounds
happen
a little
here.
Disappointing.
It is. It was like, you know, it's like here's the two big monsters of Japanese wrestling just having a draw. Anyway, but this match was not a draw, and it was absolutely fantastic, and it was so cool to see Meiko Satomura in a different environment to what you're used to seeing her in, and she really changed up a game. This was not all of the things you would normally see from Meiko Satomura, because Viper is a bigger opponent. She couldn't do the things she would normally do with someone smaller, so it was a very different kind of match. Also, the fact that she had to wrestle 3 or 4 times in this weekend meant she was having to change stuff up for the audience she had. So this was really, really cool. You know, it really shows why she's the best wrestler in the world today. And equally, Viper has all that presence and experience. She's had an absolutely amazing year in pro wrestling. One of the true success stories of 2017, she's wrestled for Stardom, had 2 big stints in Stardom, won her first championship in Stardom, and was so happy to win that championship as well. She was in the Mae Young Classic. She's you know, this tops off a year for her, which looked to be quite disappointing when you consider the fact she started off the year on the ITV World of Sport reboot, which never went anywhere. And a lot of people were considering that to be the breakthrough for British wrestling this year into the mainstream, and it never really happened. And she would have been the leading light of the women's division. But that didn't happen for her. But again, she made her own opportunities and really did awfully well out of them. So what do you think of these two, and what do you think of this particular match, Chelsea?
Oh, there are no words for Meiko Satomura. She's just so great. I tweeted last night, I was like, I don't need to tell you guys that everything that Meiko Satomura does in the ring is like amazing and perfect, right? You guys know. Like it was so cool to see her walk out through the crowd and see everybody looking at her like, oh my god, she's really here. And she has so much presence and so much charisma. And I mean, you look at her and you know that she could, you know, take anybody down with her bare hands. And she looks so determined, you know, standing across from Viper. And I was just like, I got super hype, even just like looking at her expression before they even locked up. And the stuff she does in this match is so cool. Like she moves around a lot more, like in terms of like running off the ropes and then, you know, oh, that didn't work. Let me try this instead. Let me switch up the submission I'm going to try on you. And she lets Viper toss her around, but not too much. I mean, it's just like the perfect balance of somebody who's normally like the bigger monster character. Am I articulating what I mean very well? I don't think I am.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I think you are. I think you. I see what you mean. She has to be on the defensive because she's against somebody bigger, and she's portraying that really, really well.
Yes. And it doesn't feel it doesn't feel like staged, or it doesn't feel, I don't know, sometimes when you have wrestlers changing up their styles like this, they lose a little bit of the flow, right?
Yeah.
Or it flows too well and it's so smooth that it loses the story. And none of that happens here because they're both so good. Viper is awesome. I was so happy for her when she was in the Mayhem Classic this year. She was great. I've seen some of her matches in Stardom and they're amazing. I was surprised by the stuff that they did in this match, but I wasn't surprised it was really, really good. I mean, I was like, wow, you know, Viper versus Mako, it sounds like a legitimate dream match, and I think they pulled it off. I really, really love that Viper, in addition to being somebody who can just like throw her body at somebody else and you think, oh my god, that's so scary, is also a really great mat wrestler and is also somebody who can do cool stuff on the top rope. You know, I think she's probably the best big girl wrestler that's out there right now. Like, I can't think of anybody else who I enjoy watching as much. Like, who has that aesthetic. I mean, like, what she does comes across as very, very joyful while also being very scary. And for her to be able to be scary next to Mako Satomura, who is very scary when she's like, you know, snarling at somebody as she puts a headlock on them, that was really cool. Like, it somehow, they were both able to do the stuff that they do really well without interfering with each other's ability to be really, really intimidating. And it kind of, it felt like two titans clashing. It was really, really neat.
Yeah, it's what you want from a main event, isn't it? You know, this in a tournament format, you know, it's sometimes tricky to pick a main event when you've got this much level of talent. I mean, look at the King of Trios, like on the qualification night on the Friday, the main event is usually the one dream match that they've kind of saved for the first round. And it,
right.
You run the risk of disappointing a lot of fans because one team's going to go out, you know. And it's the same deal here. This is a bit easier because it's round robin, so it's a bit easier to have the main events you want on the given nights. But again, you know, it's like, this feels like a female G1, which is the effect they were after. You know, we watched the G1 together this summer, and you know, each night there was something really special going on in the main event. And even if it was somebody like Okada and Toriano, they made it special within their own way.
Yeah.
So this was a good example of a brilliant example of how to book a tournament and save your quote unquote best match for last, and still not wear your audience out getting there with all this talent and these dream matches you've got, and still portray something that was going to create and move the story forward. And you don't get to see Scorpio Rising in Bethnal Green very often, do you?
So good. And like the handspring cartwheel, and the, what's the name of that really awesome submission, the Chuji Gatame, something like that.
Yes.
I think oh my god, I just, yeah, I marked.
The one thing I did notice is like the first time Mako Satomura came over, she didn't quite get the pop I thought she would do at Eve. And it was still a good pop, don't get me wrong, you know, and she does the thing that she always does, which is get herself over no matter what, no matter how. She is getting herself over, and she's going to do it in a big way, and that's what makes Mako Satomura great to me.
It's really amazing to me, you and I have talked about this before, how I think a lot of times people associate wrestling with the number of moves that somebody can do, right?
And yeah, yeah.
One of the things that's amazing about Mako is that she has this toolkit that's very consistent. It's not really about the depth, how she applies it. And you don't get bored, even though you're seeing a lot of the same moves in many of her matches. You know, a lot of the moves that she does are like classic standards. They're signatures of hers. And it's somehow, much like with Okada, we've said the same thing about Okada podcast before, right? Like, there's an elite tier of people who can do that, where they don't have to rely on sort of like the cheap pop from, hey, this is a really weird, bizarre thing you haven't seen before in particular, where they can tell you a story with something that you've seen over and over again, and it doesn't feel boring. It always feels fresh and cool.
And, you know, that's one of the key traits of the great heavyweight champions of all time. You look back at Harley Race and Ric Flair and the Briscoe brothers, or Gerald Briscoe, Jack Briscoe, and even people like Bret Hart. You know, they were guys that did... It wasn't a limited moveset, but it was a set moveset. When Bret Hart pulls out that... like a German suplex every once in a while, that got him much more of a pop than he did when if he did it every night. You know, it's the same thing here. It's like using your toolkit the way you want to, like you said, and trying to get the audience involved in the story, and then bringing out these big moves that people know and understand.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting to me how... I think there are a lot of wrestling fans who don't get that when they first get into wrestling, and then it becomes something that they understand as they watch more and more of it, that the moments that you create are more important, more memorable than the moves themselves.
I think you can look at it from like a literary point of view. Like if you look at a wrestling move as a sentence, how you string those sentences together is how you tell your story. And within pro wrestling, you have a limited chapter length, and each time you get in the ring is a new chapter, but how you use those sentences to create that chapter is the important thing, and how you can tell your story with your opponent at the same time will define how that chapter works. And you're going to use some cliched phrases every now and again, but it's a matter of using them to get the most out of them.
That is very poetic, James. I like that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay, so this show is available on YouTube for a limited time only. They haven't said when they're going to take it down, so get to it quickly. we were going to tag Pro Wrestling Eve in this anyway, because you know they will. I hope they appreciate it. And we're trying to, you know, give another layer of commentary on this particular show. Now, Pro Wrestling Eve, like we said, have had a fantastic year. We're going to go into spoilers mode now, so if you want to skip to the end till you've watched this and come back to us, stop now. Welcome back. All right, so we're going to flip to the end now. Charlie Morgan ends up winning this tournament in what she considers to be a career-long achievement for her, and quite rightly so as well, which means she gets the main event against Sami Zayn at the York Hall on May the 5th. And this is going to be the biggest show in Europe for a women's only wrestling company, and they've done it before. They want to do it again, and look at the talent they're bringing. Kaylee Ray versus Meiko Satomura and Aja Kong versus Viper, with Charlie Morgan versus Sami Zayn on top. And they're doing it the right way. They're not just booking big names to get you to come, they're putting the main event on top to get their young stars over as well. And I can't tell you how important that is. It's going to be something really special, I think. Also, this summer, Pro Wrestling Eve have been the absolute darlings of the mainstream press. Even today, the BBC have been running stories on Pro Wrestling Eve. Literally this summer, everywhere I turned, they were paper somewhere. The New York Times wrote about them. The Metro wrote about them. Marie Claire. All of these mainstream magazines had a story on Pro Wrestling Eve, and I think they've penetrated a market that very few other people have. I think I described a bit in my FSM story about their sudden rise this summer as, you know, they're no longer on the back pages, they're in the culture section, which is really where they should be in this particular kind of show. But it's still not lost that sporting canvas, and I think that's really important. As someone who's been watching from afar, Chelsea, what are your perceptions of Eve, and how have they grown over this year?
Oh, man. So, I mean, I don't obviously read a whole lot of press that's focused on the UK wrestling scene exclusively, but it'd be impossible to miss how much coverage Pro Wrestling Eve has gotten this year, because, like, they've been all over social media. There are people that I, you know, I follow them on Twitter for wrestling coverage who don't normally get super invested in the UK scene, who are really, really excited about this promotion. Didn't I see a picture of Emily posted something on Twitter where she was outside the BBC?
Yep.
Like in front of the big four statue?
That was Channel 4, yeah.
Channel 4, yeah, that was very intriguing. I get the sense that the word has gotten out. People know that this is the cool new thing that they have to invest their time in. The frustration I always have with really great women's wrestling, I have the same frustration with Shimmer, right? Is that they will have these amazing events and put on these amazing matches with people who are like international stars. And some of the mainstream wrestling press will still ignore them. Like Bleacher Report and what is the other one? The really big one.
Sports Illustrated.
Is it Cage Side?
Cage Side,
Sports,
yeah.
Sports Illustrated. They will totally ignore that this is happening, even while the frickin' New York Times is writing about it. I kind of think Eve is just like, you know, too cool for the people. the people who don't understand it. I just, some of it is the misogyny, you know, it's like, it's a women's wrestling promotion, it's not as interesting. But like, anybody who watched 5 minutes of this stuff would put that aside and just be able to enjoy what a great wrestling product it is. I expect that in 2018 we're probably going to see even more mainstream media coverage about Pro Wrestling Eve. And I agree, like, the culture section is where it belongs. It belongs in like, you know, that highbrow audience that like actually understands how cool it is, while also being really punk rock. I don't know how they pulled that off, but they did.
It's really cool. I just like, I don't want to rehash what I said in FSM earlier this year, but you know, it is that Riot Girl attitude to pro wrestling, which has not been done before. This is something very, very new. You know, there is people who have appropriated elements of punk rock, but these are the ones that have really brought it all together with politics and stories and, you know, such and a cool amount of cool stuff.
It's friendly and approachable while also being edgy and flipping you off. And I don't know how they did that, but it's really impressive. It's really exciting. I expect that in 2018 we're just going to keep hearing more awesome things about them, and it's going to be one of those promotions where people are going to check it out because they see really cool GIFs on Twitter and they get really excited, you know? I wish that it weren't so difficult to convince so many wrestling fans to care about women's wrestling, but if anybody can win a bunch of those people over just by being awesome, it's probably Pro Wrestling Eve.
Yep, and we'll see if they can do that in 2018, and I am pretty damn sure they can. We've got the Total Wrestling Editorial Awards coming up next month. I wonder if they'll show in them. We'll see. Right then, we would like to thank you for listening today. My guest today has been Chelsea Spollen of ShouldersUp.net. You can find her at Chelsea Comics as herself and at Shoulders_Up on the internet, where she talks about wrestling.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you very much. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter, and of course you can find the Troopany Show at Troopany Show on Twitter as well. We're also on Facebook, find us there. And if you've liked the show and you would like to support us, we're trying to keep the Troopany Show free forever for everyone. So if you could support through our Patreon page, we would be very much appreciate that. It would be really, really cool. It means that we can keep making content and maybe make more content if we can find the time, and if we get paid for it, we can build this little mini media empire we have here. Thank you very much for listening today. Next week, we are in Tokyo, Japan for Wrestle Kingdom 12, and we will be having a blast because I think everyone is trying to get on this podcast. Am I right, Chelsea?
I don't know how we're all going to talk about all our feelings about this. I think the show is going to be like 3.5 hours long, and you're going to have to edit it down for time.
We'll have to put it out in piecemeal weeks, and this match. But we will talk about that and split time appropriately and fairly amongst all of the crew. Take care, and we will see you next week. Bye!